tat, that knowledge of different sacrifices. Vidhi, try to understand. Pranipatena, by approaching a spiritual master. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada translates this as bowing down. Pariprashnena, by submissive inquiries. Sevaya, by the rendering of service. Upadekshyanti, they will initiate. Te, you, jnanam, into knowledge. Jnaninaha, the self-realized tattva of the truth. Darshanaha, seers. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam says, Dharmang tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path, nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Om jnana tinirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurunyilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I wish to now speak on the role of gurus as teachers. this is not the only perspective or aspect of gurus. It's arguably the most important or essential aspect. This the topic of Guru Tattva is vast and not very easy to understand, because the Guru is to be considered as God, although he is patently a human being. So it's not a it's not an easy subject to understand. Yesterday I spoke on the need to clearly understand Siddhanta, as stated in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Siddhanta balaya chitte na karo alash, yaha hoite krishne lage sudhira manosh. This important verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. But how are we going to understand Siddhanta? Who are we going to imbibe that understanding from? Who teaches Siddhanta is a guru. Who gives tattva darshan. In this verse of Bhagavad Gita, a well-known verse which we just chanted, is referred to tattva darshanaha, those who are seers of the truth. So the gurus, they give tattva darshan. Now this may be understood to mean philosophy, but in the word tattva darshan could be translated as philosophy. And then if you're translating it into an Indian language, you'll say tattva darshan means tattva darshan. Just like in one purport here in the it says buddhi means intelligence. So in the Hindi edition of the Bhagavad Gita it says buddhi kam arthe buddhi. So, remember reading that? So tattva darshan can be translated as philosophy. But the English word philosophy doesn't give the depth of or the exact understanding of the word tattva darshan. In a general way, it could be, mean philosophy, a study of the various factors of existence. Tattva could be translated as factors of existence. But in a more complete way, tattva darshan means to see everything in proper perspective. So that is synonymous with Siddhanta. Siddhanta is not an intellectual construct, but the vision by which one sees everything as it is. So tattva darshan is more than tattva jnana. Here we have upadekshantite jnanam. They will initiate, te, you, and jnanam, Srila Prabhupada translates this here as into knowledge. So initiation means initiation into something. One is initiated for a specific purpose. There are various kinds of initiation. There's sannyas initiation. One is initiated into the vow of sannyas. One is initiated for a sacrifice. The yajaman, the one who is sponsoring the sacrifice and wishes to get the benefit of the sacrifice, is initiated he takes a diksha. Spiritual initiation, of course, Vaishnavi Diksha means to be initiated into Vaishnav Dharma. But here in this chapter, which the subject matter is transcendental knowledge, Krishna is giving the basic understanding of, or in this particular verse, Krishna is giving the basic understanding of initiation as being initiation into knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada translates that jnanam into knowledge, initiation into knowledge. So in Vaishnava, this not only in Vaishnava Dharma, but this verse is known not only for Vaishnavas. Agyana timirandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun nilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. That the ignorance or lack of knowledge or non-knowledge by which we are in the darkness of ignorance, that is removed by the guru to whom we offer respects to, because he removes the darkness of ignorance and gives the vision by which we can see things clearly. So this is more than simply accumulating knowledge. One can accumulate facts and figures. There may be scholars in the universities who superficially know the philosophy of bhakti better than many bhaktas. There may be scholars, just like you met in Melkote, who knows the Vaishnava philosophy very well and is renowned as a teacher of Vaishnava philosophy, but who thinks Vivekananda is very good, which means he doesn't understand a single word of what he's teaching. He has no realization whatsoever. So, tattva darshan is not the same as tattva jnana. The vision to understand everything clearly, the perspective by which one can clearly see everything, by which way one can understand siddhanta, that is given by gurus. Jnanena tu tadajnanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham adityavajnanam prakashayati tatparam. That knowledge, here in this verse, Bhagavad Gita verse, which I just quoted, which is from here, this chapter, describes the knowledge which is like the sun. We are in darkness, and knowledge that's like the sun illuminates everything. At night, we had, especially yesterday was Amavasya, so it's the darkest night. So in the nighttime, you can hardly see anything at all. In fact, the fact that we can see anything here at night on Amavasya night is because we're close to a city and there's refracted neon lights. But otherwise, if you get way out in the country, in the mountain range where there's no light from the cities, then on Amavasya night, especially in the rainy season when there are clouds, you just can't see anything. Even your finger in front of your face, you can't see. At least that's my experience. Maybe some people have better night vision. But when the sun rises, you can see everything clearly. Everything becomes clear. So it's that kind of knowledge by which we can understand all the tattvas, everything in essence. What is siddhanta? Everything is understood very clearly. And again, as I said yesterday, it doesn't necessarily depend on being a great scholar. The basic points of Vaishnava philosophy are very simple. I've made a summary of the essence of Vaishnava Siddhanta. Actually, that we have, the Dashamula, that's given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The basic points we understand. Anyway, I won't go through them now, but I made a quick summary here. We have to understand how great is Krishna, how insignificant is the jiva, how merciful is Krishna to give us the opportunity to serve him, how fortunate I am to have that opportunity, so I should take it seriously and also assist in the mission to make others become fortunate. If anyone understands these points, they understand Vaishnav Siddhanta. So that is the perspective of reality as it is. Now one may say that, well, anyone can read books. There's so many books. Then what do you need a guru for? You can even teach, you read the books and teach them. What do you need a guru for? Srila Prabhupada says that in this purport, nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. And that includes Shastra. And Srila Prabhupada didn't exempt his own books from that. In fact, when he was asked, can you have a guru just by reading books, Srila Prabhupada, he was specifically asked that, and Prabhupada specifically required, no, you need to be guided. Because apart from the knowledge in the books, one requires to be guided through Maya, which is very tricky, to help us to apply the knowledge in Shastra so that we can actually derive the benefit of Shastra, which is to become free from lust, greed, anger, etc., and to become fully Krishna conscious. And it's also needed that gurus establish Siddhanta, because taking the same books, various people taking the same books and claiming allegiance to the parampara come up with very different conclusions. We both read the Bible day and night, but where you see black, I see white, said William Blake, the great self-realized soul. Well, some realization. He used to get quoted a lot in the early Back to Godheads. Hayagriva was a great fan of William Blake, who Prataparudra's looks like. Never heard of him. Well, don't worry, you didn't waste any of your life. Whatever good things William Blake has to say, you can get, you see, he's tick-ticky. You can get in full clarity and depth from Srila Prabhupada. So generally, just the way the institution of ISKCON is set up, we think of a guru as an appointed post. And not only in ISKCON, I mean, just you can say out of pragmatism, generally in a mutt or a religious institution, a Hindu or Buddhist institution or whatever, karate institution, the guru, when he sees he's getting old, appoints a successor. It's an appointed post. And even they may appoint well in advance, just like in Kanchi they always have three. So if something goes wrong with number two, then there's another one in line. There are always three in line. So, and in Udupi also, in the Ashtamat plus how many others? Three main others. They have the incumbent guru and the upcoming one. It's all lined up. But, of course, simply appointment does not make a guru. It doesn't mean that one who is appointed can't be a guru. But really, a guru means a teacher. When we think of a guru, traditionally we think of it a teacher, more than an administrator, or even more than as a preacher. Traditionally we think of a guru, and we have the idea of a guru who sits in a gurukul. Brahmachari gurukule vasandanto guru hitam. What is that? Dasavanacharan nicho. Guru sudrida sohridam. So this is the description of the brahmachari. given by Krishna, that he lives in the ashram of his guru, like a slave, with his performs menial services, controlling his senses, and with a strong bond of affection with the guru. So we see that Srila Prabhupada was principally a teacher. Now when we say teacher, when I get back to the point, teacher, in the modern age the word teacher means someone who comes home every day and thanks God he didn't get killed. Or it's a paid post. It's, as it's generally said, those who aren't good enough to do something, they teach it. Sorry about that. I know you're a teacher. That's, if you're not good enough to be a biologist, then you teach biology, for instance. It's not always true, but often it's true. And in the modern age, because a teacher is a paid post, the students tend to think of the teacher as their servant. Who do you think you are? Who the hell are you? But guru is very different. Just as the disciple lives for the guru, that's supposed to be like that, the guru is supposed to live for the benefit of the disciples. It's very different to, you know, school's over, okay, go home and just forget about it. You know, time for fun. Just like one of the teachers at school, at the school I was imprisoned in for so many years, told me that, well, I became a teacher because short hours, long holidays, steady job, no interest in teaching anymore. He did it dutifully. So Prabhupada was principally a teacher. That means he very much wanted that people understand what he had to give, which is the knowledge by which every living being can be benefited in the best possible way. And he was teaching not just ABC type, but we can see maybe more. Prabhupada was teaching formally and informally. Formally, sitting on the seat, giving lectures. And informally, he would discuss philosophy with his disciples. And especially informally in conversations, you can see how Prabhupada was really trying to get his disciples to understand the points. So guru is a teacher, and actually the role, because the essence of guruship is teaching, therefore, the Shiksha Guru is supposed to be considered more important than the Diksha Guru. Actually, often the two are the same. As Srila Prabhupada writes, one who gives Shiksha, generally one takes Diksha from them. But in Shastra, the one who gives a mantra, Diksha means accompanied by giving mantra, but extolled above him is the Shiksha Guru. If one receives instruction systematically over a considerable period, then one will tend to see that person as a Shiksha Guru. And we practically see that the role of a Shiksha Guru in many cases can be more important than that of a Diksha Guru. For instance, the Jiva Goswami, in terms of educating Srinivas Shamananda and Narottam, he was more influential than their gurus, who sent their disciples to Jiva Goswami because he was more knowledgeable than Siddhanta. Of course, these are very general terms we're speaking in, because we see that when Hriday Chaitanya, the guru of Shyamananda, was under the impression that Jiva Goswami had given Shyamananda a new name, the name Shyamananda, and had done all of what appeared to be reinitiation, then Hriday Chaitanya became extremely upset. So, but in general, Shiksha Guru, that and we see practically that often someone who one takes Shiksha from becomes more important in the spiritual life and maybe more dear to the disciple than the Diksha Guru. I can think of just one example comes to mind of one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, who Prabhupada was good friends with, but he was godbrother means he was initiated by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But practically that godbrother, afterward he became the Shiksha disciple of one Gauranga Das Babaji in the Nitai Gaur Radhe Shamlan, and he was more into that than into the Gauriya Math teachings. And he had certain serious misunderstandings, as I got into a bit of an argument once when I saw him drinking tea, and I said, come on, what are you doing? You're supposed to be a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I said it more politely than that. Then a whole discussion came out. He had many misconceptions. He said, well, there's nothing against tea and Hari Bhakti Vilas, was his rejoinder, and other things. So anyway, that's just an example. Those who emphasize Diksha over Shiksha, that's generally done because you see there are institutional gurus. And another example of an institutional guru is, it may not be a formal institution, but the Kula Guru. The son of a guru, he becomes a guru, just like the son of a barber becomes a barber. The son of a farmer becomes a farmer. The son of a potter becomes a potter. The son of a guru becomes a guru. And the disciples, the sons of the disciples of his father become his disciples. Now, some people put so much emphasis on Diksha because the mantra is important, that they fail to see that some of the people who are giving mantra, they don't give any shiksha with it. Not in every case, but in many cases, they are just formal gurus. And they give mantra, and they give blessings, and they take dakshina. And that's all. That's their whole role of guru, as they see it. The role of a teacher is no longer there. Someone told me, in Gujarat, where the Vallabh Sampradaya is prominent, that he'd taken the Brahma Sambandha, which is equivalent to Diksha in the Vallabh Sampradaya. So he took that, and then he waited till everyone had finished getting their Brahma Sambandha, some ceremony. Then he approached the guru and asked him some philosophical question, at which point the guru became angry and said, why are you asking these questions? You know, he didn't consider it at all his duty to give any kind of instruction to his disciple, even if asked for it. So, though if Diksha is, not that Diksha is unimportant, but if it's emphasized over Shiksha, then the formality is elevated over the essence. What is Diksha? Divyam jnanam yato dadyat purva papasya sankshayam. That It is that knowledge. Diksha is that tato diksha vidhanena. It is that vidhi, that function by which knowledge is imparted, by which one is freed from previously committed sins. So, diksha without shiksha, or emphasizing the formality of diksha without the essence of it, which is shiksha, then naturally everything becomes weak. From the very beginning, because there's no proper teaching, people think like that. And then everything becomes weak. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. A spiritual master is recognized as an actual guru when it is seen that he has changed the character of his disciples. This is in a purport in connection with Haridas Thakur changing the character of the prostitute who approached him with the intent of making him fall down. So to change the character of the disciples, which means that is possible if disciples can imbibe siddhanta or tattva darshan or understanding of what their role is, which is that they're eternal servants of Krishna. Of course, you can say that, but we see that you can just say it, but we see that Srila Prabhupada, by practice and by precept, precept means by verbal instruction, both by practice and precept, was constantly instructing his disciples that they are eternal servants of Krishna. So it's not just a matter of saying it one time and that's enough, but it has to be emphasized and demonstrated in various ways. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, it's not enough to say how God is great. One has to know how he is great. So to say that we're a servant of Krishna, that's all right, but then all the nuances of understanding that and how it's practically applied, how we can actually serve Krishna when we are free from false ego. What is that? Ahankarahina Gurudev Kripa Bindu Dia Abhimana Shunya. I'm just forgetting now. So, now, coming to our society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is bequeathed to us by Srila Prabhupada. His disciples are supposed to carry on his mission. We see that some gurus within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, they do not speak philosophically as Srila Prabhupada did. I'm not saying that they're totally devoid of it, but often their classes, it's telling stories or something new, so trying to have something new. Maybe they think philosophy is not very interesting or something. And maybe it isn't interesting to a lot of people, but then they're Shudras. So Prabhupada's aim was at least within the centers of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, the preaching centers, that should be staffed by people of Brahminical disposition who are interested in philosophy, in understanding it. And Srila Prabhupada, and no doubt if he had told many stories and jokes and all this, his disciples would have been pleased, but they wouldn't have been able to understand. At least Srila Prabhupada, he set the tenor for the movement as being very grave and very much philosophically based. So do something new, just like, you know, what is it, laughing therapy or past life regression therapy or, you know, something new. Always dream up something new. But Srila Prabhupada always emphasized that his very qualification to be a guru was that he didn't give anything new. I have no personal qualification. Famous words of Prabhupada. The most qualified person ever, practically. He said, I have no personal qualification. I simply tried to serve the mission of the previous acharyas. So, then how is a guru understood? Within our movement, of course, this is, I'm making a subjective statement here. It's open to discussion. But I, just like we see, that Prabhupada was very clearly a teacher. But my subjective outlook is that the role of guru in ISKCON today is not generally seen as that of a teacher. As a preacher, yes. It means trying to bring new people in, which is very good. Prabhupada wanted that. But Prabhupada, he also, as well as preaching to outside people and bringing new people in, he spent at least as much time preaching to his own disciples and trying to get them to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So if the guru is not seen as a teacher, and if the philosophical understanding is not emphasized, then it's their role as a guru is seen to be a figurehead, or as a preacher who brings new people in, or a combination of this. They're judged by the number of people that they can initiate, quantity over quality, and devotees, you know, if you see how devotees think of them, it's not so much in terms of their teaching, because they don't really do a whole lot of it. But, you know, what do they do? Who did they meet? Just like Prabhupada would meet important people and preach to them. Whereas nowadays we tend to meet people and shake hands with them, and that's about this. And give them Prabhupada's books, or maybe some other books. So, and then we become, you know, there's autobiographies, biographies, and it becomes, the guru is seen something as something like an icon. Even, I like very much this Transcendental Diary of Harishari Prabhu, because it gives, of course I'm not saying against Prabhupada Lilamrita, but because it's a day-by-day overview of Prabhupada's activities, and Harishari Prabhu did not neglect to include Prabhupada's daily classes in detail what Prabhupada was teaching, which is, you know, Prabhupada considered a, you know, very important, that he gave class every day. So that it very much emphasizes the point that Prabhupada was teaching, the philosophy that he was teaching. Now, if gurus are not seen as teachers, then they may become something like an icon. An icon, something like, here in India we have someone like Amitabh Bachchan or Sachin Tendulkar, and in the West, Madonna. I guess she's way out of date, but I don't know who the latest ones are. Even Madonna came up after I joined the movement. Mick Jagger, he's going on after all these years. So these are icons. And they are influential in many ways, culturally or anti-culturally. or culturally in the wrong way. But icon means it's something shallow, adulated by shallow people with nothing significant to offer for the uplift of human society. Now maybe that's a bit of a harsh assessment for the gurus in ISKCON. But if people, I'm not saying that they don't have anything to offer, but if people tend to see them only, like the guru, da 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 da, and they have a big kirtan and big foot washing ceremony, these things are all good. But then, what are they teaching? That is the essence. Prabhupada would, have a big kirtan to welcome him, foot washing ceremony. Then he would sit down and speak on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So, what is the teaching? Now, it seems in that some, I'm not saying all, some of the gurus in our movement do not think it necessary to repeatedly and in detail speak philosophy as Srila Prabhupada did. Therefore, the criteria for being a guru becomes something different. It's like how many initiated, how much association he had with Srila Prabhupada, how many, how saintly he is, how humble he is, how many projects and temples he opens, which are all good things, but the essence is, what does he teach? Without that, it's, something like decoration on dead body. And again, I'm not saying that none of the gurus in ISKCON don't teach, but I'm saying the emphasis is not on that, and they're not seen as teachers. They're seen more as dispensers of mercy. So people think, something like the Prakriti Sahajiyas, who think that the guru, he just gives mercy, that's all. Just mercy, just give blessings. Now, because many of the gurus who are supposed to be the spiritual leaders of the society do not teach the philosophy of Krishna. They give lectures regularly, but they don't. I don't find the idea to impart spiritual knowledge with the aim of educating the listeners so that they can be. What is that? Siddhanta balya chitte na karaha alash eha hoite Krishna lage sudhi ramanos, so that their mind may become firmly attached to Krishna, so that they may become free from anarthas. So because the lectures are often somewhat light, not guru, not heavy. Within our movement, philosophy is seen as something, a philosophical understanding of Krishna consciousness is seen as something which is there if you want it. Optional, yeah, not essential. The main thing is have kirtan and mercy and prasadam, and Gaurnitai are very merciful. Mercy is the main thing. Because yad yad acharati shreshas tatta devetaro janaha sayat janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanuvartate. Maybe the gurus are thinking, well, someone else can teach the philosophy, it's straightforward. And others do also their bhakti shastri courses and this and that. But gurus are especially meant for giving siddhanta. I mean, guru is a general term which is largely interchangeable with the word acharya. But acharya is often used in a sense that is, you could say, more than guru, in the sense that the acharya gives the siddhanta. And therefore we have, even though in our Gaudiya Sampradaya there have been literally thousands of gurus, some are recognized as the acharyas, specifically as the acharyas of the Sampradaya, because of their philosophical contribution. It's interesting that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is given in the list of Sampradaya acharyas and not Vrindavan Das. Because Krishnadas, he in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in much more detail established the philosophical teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and he not only what are the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, but what is the position of Lord Chaitanya, he established that. Chaitanya Charitamrita is a much more siddhantic book than his Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. So, gurus are expected to act as acharyas. The terms are interchangeable to a large extent, but they should at least know the siddhanta and then impart that to others, and be very clear on the siddhanta and impart that to others. So if gurus don't act as acharyas by giving the siddhanta, then the door is open to upper siddhanta. It's always the gurus are required to give the siddhanta, because there are so many wrong ideas floating around, and often wrong ideas seem to be right to people who don't know what is the actual situation or actual understanding. So it's required that gurus very deeply understand and study the teachings of the acharyas and understand them and impart them to others. Now, if the gurus of our movement, they are considered to be the spiritual leaders, but they can be spiritual leaders by giving spiritual teachings. And if they don't do so in an essential manner, in a clear, definitive manner, then others will give their ideas. There seems to be an idea that, well, you shouldn't be controversial, which means that no siddhanta. Srila Prabhupada, in his Siddhanta Balaya Chitte Nakara Alash, he translates siddhanta that one should not avoid such controversial topics. Siddhanta means controversy. Siddhanta is established by khandan, by smashing the wrong ideas. So it becomes controversial. And then we have unity and diversity. I guess that's another whole lecture, unity and diversity. But the idea that we all live together and there are different approaches, but something, that's all right, but some things are wrong. And some things are right. And it is the duty of the acharyas to establish that. Of course, there is some evolving hermeneutic within ISKCON that the GBC is supposed to act as the acharya for the whole society. And wouldn't it be wonderful if they did? It's not such an easy thing when you... I'm not saying this in a pejorative way, but the GBC, being over a worldwide institution, it has clearly a political role also. It unavoidably has a political role. It's like a mixture of Brahminical and Kshatriya duties. So, and now you can get into so many talks. Brahmins are independent, so they can speak the truth. Like Chanakya, he deliberately lived in a cottage, and he didn't take favors from the king, so he could speak the truth. He has nothing to lose, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. Chop off my head? Okay, you can do what you like. But just like that quote you sent me, which I'd already included in the book. We're not going to compromise. We have to speak the truth. That's all. So, the leadership, if it's not given by those who are looked to as the natural leaders, then it goes elsewhere, and the teaching is actually done mostly, like I said, it's optional. I mean, there are classes, but the class is not generally considered the high point of any function. It's usually the kirtan and the prasadam and the socializing in any festival. And if the class is considered a high point, it's because the speaker is known as an attractive speaker. Tells lots of pastimes in which everyone enjoys. They enjoy it. Interestingly, in the Gauriya Math at the time of Saraswati Thakur, they would have many festivals, and the main function in every festival was the speaking. They'd have different devotees speaking in different parts of the mat, and it would just go on all day speaking. Kirtan, that's kirtan by speaking. So, the leadership goes elsewhere. The teaching, it's optional. You can take a Bhakti Shastri course if you like. But because there's such a hermeneutic or convention is a better word, of being, not treading on anyone's toes and accommodating all different ideas. Therefore, within Bhakti Shastri courses, on any controversial point, they're not able to establish this any siddhanta. And it often seems that they're more comfortable to accommodate the teachings of Krishna consciousness to that of the modern academia, although Srila Prabhupada, his approach was quite the opposite. That the modern academia, they must be misled because Brahm Pramad Vipralipsa Karana Patam. This mistakes, illusion, cheating propensity, and imperfect senses. You cannot really know anything, even about the material world. So Srila Prabhupada challenged them, but challenge is an outdated term in our movement. So much of the teaching goes on in our movement, even the supposed teaching of Prabhupada's books, through the lens of anthropology, psychology, and various other relativistic, mundane disciplines, as opposed to Siddhanta. Relativism is exactly opposed to Siddhanta. Siddhanta means this is correct. And relativism means nothing's correct. Whatever you like. And the general consensus among scholars at any particular time is taken to be the fact. But it's subject to revision at any time. Quite the opposite to establishment of Siddhanta, which is to understand the points clearly according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Now, what I'm saying is not just some theoretical point, but actually in some of our Bhakti Shastri courses, there are actually required modules from mundane universities in mundane subjects. And to be a sannyasi in ISKCON, you have to have a Bhakti Shastri degree, and probably that's going to come very soon for our gurus. In other words, you have to be well trained in upper siddhanta, then only you can be a guru. How strange. For those who will hear, siddhanti abaliya chitte na karaha Allah. Don't be lazy. It's a kind of laziness to not try to understand Siddhanta very clearly. Just to say, different opinions and all this, and that's laziness, not trying to understand reality as it is, to understand all the points in detail. Okay, I'll finish there for now. It's 9 o'clock and time for the class is over. I'm sure there could be many questions about this. Shall I take one or two? Yes, always you have questions. For coming parachuted in straight from the mundane academia. And what is what? My personal opinion. I usually don't, when people ask me what is my opinion, I always tell them that my opinion, it's of no use you even considering what it is. Because personal opinion means I'm just a tiny insignificant midget, and what does it matter what my opinion is? We should try to understand what the fact is. The very question, what is your opinion, means that one has to begin understanding reality.
Okay, so I ask another way. Does your understanding of the other concept blind following and
blind following and absurd inquiries?
Are they different from Srila Prabhupada?
I believe I've given several lectures on this topic, isn't it? You want to give him the links for those in Salem, in that rented house. I gave some class, I believe, several times. I've given them the difference between blind following and intelligent following, so in detail you can get the lecture. Vrindavan Chandra will help you with that. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. It's another one I might get in trouble for. You never know. It's difficult to argue with, though.
They should be happy that there are Brahmanas who speak and who want to write them. They should at least be happy that there is somebody.
As long as you don't pinpoint anyone personally, I think you can get away with it. Well, some people who like to hear. And you know what? It doesn't matter whether they like to hear or not.
Body works like a person, has its own ego.